Oi, you. It's time for another episode of Dorothy and the Dealer. Let's tune into the conversation.
Well, welcome back, Dr. Dave.
Thank you.
Everybody loved your last podcast with us. They loved it, loved it, loved it. And a lot of people asked us for your details, and they just thought it was really cool just hearing you speak that way. So it's really cool to have you back.
That's wonderful compliment and feedback. I don't think everybody loved it.
Everybody that spoke to, I think everyone that spoke to me loved it.
Yeah.
Is there anyone that you know that didn't love it, Dave?
There are some people.
Are you prepared to talk about it?
We might not talk about them until later.
Okay. That's a cool story, actually.
So tell us, tell everybody what you're doing now. What are you doing?
So I have a couple of endeavours, but one of the big ones at the moment is working in medicinal cannabis. And basically seeing the scope that would come through general practice, sort of patient load, like people that are looking for alternative therapies.
Right.
So how long have you been doing that?
A little over a year, yeah.
You were just saying that a lot of people don't understand that it's actually legal in Australia now.
Absolutely. So about 2016, I think the federal legislation started to change, and then it's kind of been slowly opening up and becoming more. It hasn't just happened bang. It's kind of rolled out in small stages and becoming more accessible, easier for doctors to prescribe and easier for patients to access.
Has that kind of splintered general practice? Has it, you know, it like you, I've said to you before, you there's holistic chiropractors and then there's medical chiropractors, and they fucking notoriously do not like each other, you know, and the holistics are considered very woo-woo and cop a lot of flack, both from physios, as it seems, and from GPs, and also from their own tribe, you know, their own other side. Is it the same sort of thing here? Is it splintering?
I think it certainly is. It's still a very taboo, stigmatized thing, even within, you know, medicine and general practice and other specialties. The evidence for cannabis is emerging, and we need a lot more research and a lot more studies. I think there's some healthy and unhealthy skepticism towards it. We need to have people that are still staunch non-believers who want to see the most rigorous randomized control trials and heaps of evidence that shows that it's working.
That's an important point, isn't it? You need the other side. You know, you need to have the pushback because it keeps everybody on their toes, right? Because you are dealing with cannabis. You know, you are dealing with THC cannabis and non-THC cannabis, which is a drug and is also considered, it's, you know, this distribution can be illegal and it's a crime.
Yeah, but why is it a crime? Why do they criminalize something that's natural? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And so I guess now you've got to, I think the way I understand it is that people were educated to think that something natural was not going to be good for them. And now we have to educate them to show them that there are actually benefits towards it. I don't know. How do you see that?
I should have mentioned at the start, you know, I always like to say a little disclaimer.
Yeah, of course.
I didn't actually realise we were recording before we started, but I always like to say that what we're talking about is general information purposes only.
Yeah.
So think about what you hear and then see whether it's relevant to you as a human, and then chat to your health professional to make sure it's the right decision for you. So it's all just general information. But yes, there's a long history behind cannabis, why it has been so highly regulated up until now. And a lot of that, in my understanding, has been social, political, and financial from the very early days when, I mean, cannabis has been around medicinally since the 1800s, and most people don't realise that companies now like Eli Lilly, Parc Davis, Pfizer, some of the big pharmaceutical companies were the original sellers of cannabis in the 1800s.
Wow.
And it was used, it kind of, before it made its way into Western medicine, it kind of was being tested and used in India. And as one particular, he's an Irish doctor, Dr. William O'Shaughnessy is the guy that took it from where he was kind of testing it and experimenting on animals before using it on humans. And it had things like rabies, cholera, infantile convulsions, tetanus, other kind of things that he was doing in British India. And then he took cannabis and brought it into the kind of medical field in the UK. And then it's kind of grown in that way. So before prohibition happened, it was really a thing. You know, people were using it for all kinds of things, for migraines, for headaches, for pain, nausea, menstrual cramps in women.
Mm-hmm.
So it has a long history before it kind of got outlawed.
Mm-hmm. And was that non-THC cannabis?
No, that's talking about THC-based preparations.
Right.
Yeah.
And then because, I mean...
Well, they hadn't isolated CBD or THC, so they didn't know what the
maybe you should explain that as well so that anybody who doesn't understand that that's listening can understand it.
Mm. So you have the plant which grows in the ground. When you pull it out and extract it, there's kind of probably, you know, hundreds of different things in it. We call those cannabinoids. Well, there's four things. There's cannabinoids, which I'll come into. There are terpenes, which are the aromatic compounds. So when you
smell
cannabis, you smell the terpenes. There are flavonoids, which are the pigments. You know, when you get an orange or a lemon, you're getting hesperidin, is one of the flavonoids that gives it the color, and they're kind of involved in antioxidants. So kind of three big things. Within the cannabinoids, there are two main ones that people know about, and they know about THC, delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol, and they know about cannabidiol, or CBD.
Right.
And that's what most people know, but know that there are probably like 100 or more other cannabinoids,
right,
which we call minor cannabinoids.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got the plant, major cannabinoids, THC, CBD, minor cannabinoids, and then a whole host of other things, which all have a therapeutic role.
Mm-hmm.
People are like, oh, is it the THC or the CBD that's doing it? It can be a whole host of things.
Right.
Yeah.
So then when we talk about cannabinoids, THC and CBD, what's the effects of having them, just so people know, of having them in the supply and not in the supply? What is the effects?
When you say in the supply?
Well, if I've been given some cannabis,
right,
and I don't want to get stoned from it, but
yeah,
I want its other factors,
yeah,
healing principles,
yeah,
what's that?
So we have in the body the endocannabinoid system, which it's called endocannabinoid, which comes from endogenous, meaning within,
mm-hmm,
and cannabinoid from the plant. We already make our own cannabinoids in the body. So molecules like CBD and THC, our body naturally makes those.
Mm-hmm.
And there's two main ones of those. I won't go into the names, but then they bind to receptors. So we already have this internal system with its own cannabinoids. So we know that it's an important system, a bit like the hormonal system, the endocrine system. There is this system in the body, and it's been neglected in teaching. Like, no doctor is taught about the cannabinoid system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody that I know has learned about that in medical school. It would be like doing medicine and not learning about the endocrine system or the nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that has been known about but not taught.
Mm-hmm.
So we have that system in our body, and then we have found that there are these exogenous, so outside of the body, cannabinoids which come in plants. So within cannabis, CBD and THC, they have different functions. They also have a lot of crossover, and they work together synergistically, so they enhance one another.
Right.
So I guess simply CBD is a very low toxicity molecule. Keep in mind that both CBD and THC come as different preparations. So they can come as oils that people can put under their tongues or massage into their skin. They come as the actual plant, which people can inhale using a vaporizer.
Mm-hmm.
They're being made into gummies and capsules and other sort of preparations, but we're talking about, you know, two major molecules. CBD is low toxicity, so it's super safe stuff, and we can come back to that.
Mm.
It's has a role on the immune system. So we say immunomodulatory to mean it's affecting the immune system,
mm-hmm,
and in general terms, it's boosting and enhancing the immune system.
Right.
It has a significant role in reducing inflammation. So
wow,
people that have got arthritis or, you know, inflammatory bowel problems or any kind of inflammatory process,
mm-hmm,
may potentially benefit,
mm-hmm,
from having this molecule, this inflammatory, anti-inflammatory molecule in their body, CBD.
Right. Wow.
CBD is non-sedating, so when you take it, you don't become groggy or lethargic, which is quite kind of different to contrast with THC. You can drive with it. It doesn't impair you.
Right.
One point, most people say that CBD is non-psychoactive, meaning it doesn't work on the brain.
Right.
That's not actually true, because it does. It has a role in reducing anxiety and making people more settled and calm in their body. What they mean is it's not impairing. It doesn't get you intoxicated or inebriated. It doesn't get you stoned.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Wow. And then so the cannabinoid system now, which they're studying, they're saying that the plant and its cannabinoids are now affecting the cannabinoid system and therefore enhancing certain properties, reducing
yeah.
certain stress levels. That's crazy. And again, so can I ask a question? I know when I first spoke to you about this, you were like, oh, you know, it's a bit controversial, and you were a little bit hesitant to go down the road of it. Now that you're a year in, are you loving it more?
I think it's great. I really think it's a great therapeutic to introduce to people.
Right.
When I spoke to you before, I didn't know anything about it. I really didn't, and I was as biased and caught up in the stigma and the nonsense around it as most people are, including a lot of practitioners, and no disrespect to anybody, but the education isn't there for most doctors. So
right.
if you come through a general Western medical education, you're not taught about it. So you come out and then you're subject to the biases that it exists at a political, social level. Oh,
mm-hmm.
this is nasty, this is for drug addicts, this is blah, blah, blah. So I didn't know about it, and I didn't know the pathway to get into it, and I thought it was going to be really complex and really drawn out. It's really quite simple.
Mm.
So potentially any general practitioner or specialist who is willing to learn about it and move into finding another tool in the toolkit, I think it's amazing. Like it
right.
should be something that's embraced more, in my opinion.
Mm.
Have you got people that you've like specifically worked with that you can share like the benefits of like what it's done and how it's helped?
I mean,
obviously we
absolutely yes. There's things that are well established in the research and the literature, and you know, regulatory bodies say there is evidence that cannabis medicines can work for A, B, C, D.
Right.
And then there's a whole host of other things which haven't been studied enough. Not to say that they're not effective for that, they just haven't invested the money or
mm-hmm.
the time or to do the studies. So I would go out on a limb and say I've seen people in pretty much every problem that you can imagine
mm-hmm.
almost having some kind of benefit from
well,
cannabis medicines in general.
So does that is that a particular way that they're taking it, a particular dosage? What like is it the oils that they're taking? What is it that they're doing?
Or
what's the best way?
An individual application for an individual
different people.
It
disease.
Is. There's general principles that can apply to a lot of people. And one of those is to try and pair the two together. So using CBD and THC,
mm-hmm.
there's something called the entourage effect that means when you take one thing and you use it on its own, one constituent, if you use things together the way that nature intended from the whole plant,
yeah.
like, that there, you get a effect that's greater than the sum of the individual parts.
Right. Yeah,
so
yeah.
they call that the entourage effect, the enhancing mm-hmm. effect. So, yes, people are using CBD and THC together to get the synergy. People, it depends on people's preferences, you know. We're not trying to turn people into smokers or to be inhaling
yeah.
cannabis medicines if they don't want to. There's
yeah.
many, many, many people that just use oils, CBD
yeah.
oil, THC oil.
Right.
There are people that have come from a very long background of inhaling, you know, whether it's tobacco or nicotine or whether they've
yeah.
used cannabis from the black market to sort of self-medicate their,
yeah.
their stuff while
yeah.
their ailments while they couldn't get access to medicinal
yeah.
cannabis. It depends on people's preferences a bit, and then doing it in guidance and trying to tailor make something where the person has something that they can use in different scenarios. Okay, today I'm at work, I need to be sharp and you know clear between the
mm-hmm.
ears. CBD is a great option to mitigate some of my anxiety
mm-hmm.
without being impaired. When I get home, THC can be something that I can use to relax, unwind, treat pain when
mm-hmm.
I am able to sort of relax more and don't have to be as switched on.
Is that the main difference between the two, the CBD and the THC? Or is there more?
So they do different things, but so THC is generally sedating.
Yeah.
I say generally, not absolutely. CBD won't give you that same sedation, but THC will. THC works on the mind more.
Right.
And can have this sort of whole body relaxation. Anyone that's ever used cannabis can attest to the fact that when they inhale it, they often become very relaxed.
Yeah.
And it can help with muscle relaxation. I've seen it help people with unwinding, calming down, managing anxiety, pain. You know,
mm-hmm.
THC is a great painkiller. It's used
mm.
in, you know, cancer and non-cancer
yeah.
pains,
mm.
chronic pains.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I know that you talk about holistic health a lot. You know, in our last podcast, you were talking about holistic health a lot. You were talking about not just treating what was going on
mm-hmm.
on the surface level, but actually going to the core of the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the best things from that podcast, I think, was that you were saying that the doctors aren't they're experts in what they know and in terms of that they understand certain things. But as individuals, we need to make our own mind up, take advice, but make our own mind up, which you've kind of said already here. How much of the, in terms of what you're talking about, in terms of using medical marijuana, is solving a core of a problem? How much of it is sort of treating the symptoms?
Yeah, it's a great point, and I'm glad you bring it up, because nothing has changed for me with my mindset. Cannabis is one tool alongside the strongest thing that you can do for chronic disease prevention and management, which is lifestyle changes.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys know that lifestyle medicine is my jam, and that's what I'm really passionate about. We're trying to introduce cannabis to go alongside that. So can cannabis treat some things at a root cause level? Probably.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen people use it to go in on a deeply personal journey to manage, to figure out what their anxiety is about,
mm-hmm.
or their low mood, you know, their depression, or other psychological symptoms that they've tried coming up with conventional psychology, or they've read a whole bunch of self-help books or whatever, and they're still finding that they're not quite getting in. I think I've seen people use cannabis in that way, but it goes alongside everything else.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be done really well where people are using it small amounts and finding a way to introduce it alongside other stuff, and that's how it should be done in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
You need to try and get all of the different ducks in a row, tackling it from all the different levels, not just putting a band-aid on it. Cannabis can be a band-aid, and it is used as a band-aid for a lot of people in much the same way that pharmaceuticals are. So you could, if you were cheeky, you could say, well, look, the cannabis industry is just like the pharmaceutical industry. They've just come out and now taken these products and they've taken a plant, productized it, and now making a lot of money off it. if it's used wisely, with guidance and with someone who is aware and conscious, which is the big thing, isn't it, in life? If you can remain conscious and aware about what you're doing in all moments and trying to figure out what's happening as it transpires, not burying stuff and just laying layers of complexity. It can be used as a way to hide.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny, you know, you spoke about misuse, but misuse can be, you know, the misuse can be any pharmaceutical. You know, you can misuse any drug.
Yeah.
And so it takes a level of self-awareness, and also making sure from the doctor or the administrator's perspective that they have to be able to make sure, you know, as you're speaking to the client, that the client, you know, whether you're dying, you know, you're prescribing an opiate or anything, you know, and you have to be able to go, hold on a minute, you know, you're not using this for the right reason.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's funny how we're speaking about, you know, declassification and the fact that it's been able to be used by the general public, but it's under all that scrutiny. But any drug can be under that scrutiny.
100%.
Any drug.
100%. So it's as much the prescriber being aware as well. You can't be everybody's friend when you are a doctor or prescribing for people.
Mm.
You have to have some fucking hard conversations with people.
Yeah.
And we're there to help that person to empower themselves and to change their life, which is the whole message, and to get a better quality of life. But people need guidance as well, and it's very easy to lose sight of where you are or to fall into something, and next minute your doses are escalating and life is complex and people have really tragic backstories and lots of hard stuff going on for them. But you need somebody else who's a little bit impartial to say, hey, this is creeping up. We need to do something else.
Yeah.
Prescribing more and giving people what they want is not the answer. Sometimes you have to say, look, this has become a problem now.
Mm-hmm.
It can be a drug of dependence for some people, a small minority of people, and it can be a drug of abuse, like anything, exactly like you're saying. Opiates, benzodiazepines, dexamphetamine, stimulants, sleeping tablets, they all have the potential.
Mm.
So it's the way that they're used.
So then what would, if that's the case across the board, why would you, like, what is it about this that you perceive is people need to be educated about, or why do you think that we need to know a little bit more about this as opposed to pharmaceuticals or as opposed to, you know, going down that road?
I think people are very comfortable with pharmaceuticals now. It's been the main paradigm for so long.
Mm-hmm.
When you go and see a doctor or a specialist or a GP, there's a very good chance you're going to come away with a tablet solution or a product, a tablet. Many people don't respond to certain medications, mm-hmm. or it just doesn't get the job done. People with chronic pain, I think everybody's heard that story of someone who maybe they have cancer and they're sort of terminal and they're on heaps of morphine and opiates and they're just constipated, drowsy, groggy, having all these side effects but not getting that much pain relief from it anymore. It ceased to stop working in a sense.
Yeah.
So people often don't get the response, and then there's the side effects that come with it, and pretty much every drug that exists has a potential to have side effects. And a lot of people really put up with some really onerous and awful things.
If you
look at the antidepressants, for example, things like the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor, the SSRI, which most people have heard of in depression, they have a whole swagger of side effects. They might affect people's sexual life through, you know, sexual dysfunction, inability to get an erection, whatever. They affect people's energy. They might be fatigued. They might feel numb like a zombie. Their moods can fluctuate, or they can be in a much very restricted range where they can't enjoy things and they can't. They don't have the low, but they don't have the high. So there's, people are often battling, and they've tried lots of different things. And that's kind of what the regulatory bodies around cannabis say. They say cannabis should be reserved for use when conventional therapies or first-line treatments have failed. So there's a lot of people that fall into that category. Heaps. You know, everyone in this room knows someone who has tried those avenues and tried lots of things, and they just end up no better, sometimes worse. So we now have, it's another therapy, and it works on so many things. I've seen cannabis.
And do you feel like it's, I mean, in the past 5 years, I mean, especially now in the past 2 to 3 years, the relaxing of restrictions around it is actually quite welcoming. I mean, it seems to be, but do you think that's driven out of a medical desire? Do you think it's driven from pharmaceutical need for
Did
more
you
profit?
Say pharmaceutical?
If that's a thing, maybe now. But pharmaceutical desire for more revenue, or the fact that governments can't control it anymore, or is it a bit of everything? Look, there is some, definitely just, it's showing some stats in terms of additional use, and but also it's a bit of everything, it's business.
I think you're spot on. There is the business, and there are products which are really expensive. And you're like, this seems very similar to this. One is cost a lot, one costs a little. So I think there's definitely profit to be made, and there is business, and I'm not condemning that. I'm not saying that it's necessarily a bad thing. But there is a desire and a need. Many, many people have used cannabis maybe recreationally to begin with, but then realised that it's actually really helpful for treating a number of their symptoms. So a lot of patients that come to see us, they've already tried it. They're not coming in saying, hey, what is this cannabis stuff? They're like, look, it helps my sleep. It helps my mental health. I have people come to me and they say, I'm a better father. I'm a better son. I'm a better brother. My wife says I'm way better. When I'm at work, I'm more motivated. I'm, you know, getting promotions. It's very hard to argue with some of the compelling things that people put forward. We're not just talking about like people abusing drugs, which is the way that it's been stigmatized
betrayed
for so long. I forgot your question. Did I answer it?
Yeah, I think you did. I was just trying to say, you know, what do you feel is driving that? Do you feel that it is, as I said, profit? Is it actual, it's medicinal responses, or is it a bit mixture of everything, you know? Is it a government really realizing that there's money in it and they want to deregulate it? And so it's obviously a mixture of everything. So how do you, somebody comes to you, how do you know we're going to, how to actually administer? How are you doing that? How do you go, okay, this person needs this amount of this or this amount of that? How are you doing that?
Well, that's complex, but at least, you know, if you took CBD, for example, it's been studied and we know that there's a range of what the kind of doses that work. Starting people on low doses, it's been studied in really huge doses, and there's people that have experimented and tried with huge doses. Basically, we start people on low doses in general, and we gradually build up and we see what happens for them. Whether they want CBD or THC, I like to try and get both into a lot of people, provided that it's going to fit with their life. So it's part need, it's part preference, and it's part how it's going to work in their life. So a lot of people can benefit from both. It's not for everybody, and there are caveats to that. I don't want to make it sound like it's a panacea. It's definitely not a panacea. People have said cannabis fixes everything. It's nonsense. And it definitely has some caveats. We need to make sure that people don't, like, you wouldn't give either medicine to someone who's pregnant or breastfeeding.
Right.
You just wouldn't, because the science says that that's potentially harmful.
Right, right.
We're careful in other situations, people that have unstable heart disease, so people with, you know, stents or blocked coronary arteries, we're careful with using these medicines, or people that are on certain medications, blood thinners, other things. So it's there's lots of prongs to it, but basically getting someone in, identifying what their challenges are, and then seeing, there's people that come to us with all kinds of things, and, you know, one of those is cancer. And people coming in saying, look, I want to use both CBD and THC to get rid of my cancer.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, we need to know what the research says
mm-hmm.
to be able to, you know, equip people for managing their expectations.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And look, anecdotally, there are people that have come in and said all around the world that using these medicines have got rid of their cancer. They've had it, they've seen it on scans, they've used it, it's gone away.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have enough research to say there is, you know, people looking at different mechanisms in the lab with rats, and they have done it in people as well, in small numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we need to try and separate what we know and what we. It's still an emerging area.
Yeah,
and there's way more research that needs to be done. We need to try and expand what we actually know.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you live the most extraordinary life, there is always more to learn. This is why tens of thousands of people are using MJB Seminars techniques to hack their consciousness and bridge the gap from where they are to where they actually want to be.
MJB Seminars use cutting-edge transformational processes that are science-based and backed to help people break through subconscious barriers and limiting beliefs in order to reset, reboot, and live inspired. If you'd like to know more today, Google search MJB Seminars Bridge the Gap. Click on the first link and watch the video.
Now, for simply watching the video, you will also receive a complimentary coaching session with one of our master coaches valued at over $600 to help you get traction in your life today. Remember, live life inspired.